With the Citi Business Advantage Platinum Select World MasterCard, you can turn Staples and more into a new adventure when you earn American Airlines Advantage miles on all your business purchases, from office supplies to airline tickets to car rentals. Find out more at citi.com/fly.
Blog Talk Radio.
Family tell us they still do not believe that Khalil Tatum could hurt the little girl. The D.C. police say no one has seen Melissa Rudd since March 1st, and the police say they have a record of Tatum buying large garbage bags next day.
Police have spent all day and most of the night searching an area near Kenilworth Aquatic Gardens in Northeast. We begin our team coverage with news from Shamari Stone, who just spoke to Melissa Rudd's mother. Shamari?
Well, tonight, Melissa Rudd's mother is speaking out for the first time about this latest development. She says that she defends her decision not to call police after her daughter was missing over approximately 3 weeks from the D.C. General Family Shelter behind me.
I love you. And come home to your mama safely.
Shamika Young speaks out to her missing daughter, Melissa Rudd, holding on to an 8-year-old is alive.
And if you do start my son home, you will never, ever go with anybody else be next to my side.
Shamika shares her reaction with the latest development in her own disappearance. Tonight, two D.C. police sources tell me Tatum bought lime into trouble in addition to the contractor-sized garbage bag on March 2nd. They're searching a park for Melissa. D.C. police believe she's possibly in danger.
I got my head messed up.
Shamika says she trusts 3-year-old with 51-year-old Tatum, a janitor at the shelter where she and her kids lived. Why did you trust him?
He didn't look like that type of person.
Police say he's suspected of killing his wife, Lavi, and he's on the run with Melissa.
Some people would say, why didn't you call police if your daughter was missing?
I didn't want to lose her with 3 kids.
Today we've learned the last time anyone else is known to have seen Melissa was on March 1st, and she was with Tatum.
Some say you did. You refused to fill out a missing persons report. Is that true?
And we're making that clear? No, that's not true. They never asked me to issue out a missing persons report.
Police say Melissa's mother gave her daughter to Tatum. She said he would take her to Disney on Ice and bought her gifts. Shamika tells me she loves Melissa, and she's a loving mother.
I'm a hell of a good mother. And I am going to say this. It's kids out here that wish they had a mother like me.
And tonight, something interesting to note. Shamika tells me that Melissa was in the care of Shamika's mother and sister at the time of her disappearance. Well, I called the mother and sister, and they say that's absolutely not true. Now, one thing seems to be clear. They all hope that Melissa Rudd is alive, and they want Tatum behind bars. Why do you tell me?
It's the one mic stand with Simply Nay. I am Simply Nay, in full effect. We're going to talk about this, y'all. Relisha Rudd, and not just Relisha Rudd, but the reality of D.C.'s homeless services, because I'm telling you, I work in these shelters with this community, with these people in this city, and this is really no surprise. You heard the first interview with Shamika Young, Relisha Rudd's mother, here from our local news, NBC4. The interview was with Shamari Stone. Credits to NBC4 for that footage. And, you know, you're more than welcome to join the conversation, 646-787-8623. We're going to be hearing from parents who want to speak up on the issue and how they feel. We'll also be hearing from residents of the shelter, former residents of the shelter, who indeed didn't know Mr. Khalil Tatum. We're going to be playing a lot of footage from different interviews that have taken place and just keeping you up to date on the reality of the Melissa Rudd case as well as D.C.'s homeless services. And we got to thank our sponsors, the people who make sure we can do what we do every Sunday. So let's start from the top and work our way to the bottom. First and foremost, the Soapbox Shop. Support is free. Proceeds from the soapbox shop go to a different small business every month. To have your small business considered, you want to email us onemicstandshow@gmail.com and put support my small business as your subject. If you're interested in checking out the soapbox shop, you want to visit the website soapboxshop.bigcartel.com. Yeah, so there's 5 limited edition products that are there, and very soon we'll be releasing a lot more. Moving right along, we want to thank Eve for Eve Online, the premier female dating site for lesbians. Yes, check them out. They are located Eve, E-V-E, the numeral 4, E-V-E, online.com. They're on Twitter as well as on Facebook. So be sure to support them and the things that they do. I am the official spokesperson for them, and I definitely invite you to check them out. Also, we're sponsored by the Lifestyle Power Players, a 501c7 social club, membership-only organization. If you're interested in finding out more information about this organization that caters to LGBTQI people of purpose and professionals, I definitely invite you, check them out. They're located on Twitter at DOWNWITLPP, and you can email them at lifestylepowerplayers@gmail.com. That's it. We want to thank our sponsors for believing in us and the work that we do, continuing to shout out your cash so we can say what we want here on Blog Talk Radio. If you are interested in a sponsorship with the show, email us, One Mic Stand Show, that's onemicstandshow @gmail.com, subject, sponsor, or advertising. It's nothing. We'll get back to you, let you know exactly what we can do. We do have a variety of payment plans for small and larger businesses, but if your plan is not to pay us, we can't do business with you. Love and light, though. Wishing you all the best. That's just how it works out. We have, as I stated, a very, very serious topic that we're going to be discussing today, and I'm inviting everyone. You may have noticed the number has changed, as has the URL. Check us out, 646-787-8623, and you may notice there's a little bit of a bug in my voice. Sinuses struggle on deck. I'm just trying to let you know that's the reality of what's going on. If you have a comment, something you want to say, press 1. The production team will get you queued in, and we're just going to do it like that. So, we want to play our very first song of the evening, and right after that, we want to get into this conversation, the reality of the Relisha Red story, as well as DC's homeless services, on the One Mic Stand with Simply Nay.
Champagne in the dust, though. Nigga, just because, though. Hey, what's the moment?
It wouldn't be Blog Talk Radio without technical difficulties. We're back, and we're going to get right into it. We want to just join our callers, get into the conversation. We're going to be, as I stated, playing clips from interviews, keeping you abreast of what mainstream media is saying about this, and we want to hear from you. 646-787-8623. And we're here with a person who at one time stayed at the homeless shelter, a friend of the show. How are you today, love?
I am wonderful. How are you, Nay?
I mean, you know, I waited to talk about this, not intentionally, but because we were experiencing technical difficulties with Blog Talk Radio. And now we're finally talking about this, and there's just so many gaps to this story. In the intro, I'm not sure if you heard, were you able to hear the statement the mother made in her initial comment on discovering that her daughter's gone? I mean, I think she knew, but, you know, upon being interviewed by the media regarding the discovery of her daughter being gone. She looked like she was strung out, if you're looking at it visually, and just, you know, listening to her, she just, nothing she says makes any sense at all. And I'm not even a mother, you know? But the reality is, she didn't up and disappear from the sanctity of her mom's home. They were residents, long-term residents, having been there for 18 months, of a government entity. So that just adds a layer of bullshit, for lack of a better word, that stinks. It's rather repugnant. Somebody living in that shelter previously, are you surprised that something like this has occurred?
Actually, yeah, I am. I am surprised. Disappointed and a little freaked out as well. I mean, I moved out, over a year ago. Close to a year and a half ago, and I knew him. I knew Tatum. And, you know, I've had a couple of conversations about the issue itself, and one of the things that was asked of me, well, didn't anybody, you know, think it was cause for concern that he was giving the little girl money? And my thing was no, because although, according to the rules, security and staff are not supposed to associate with the residents there. It was typical. It was nothing for, you know, people to borrow or buy cigarettes from each other, borrow money from each other. Staff gave kids candy and chips and, you know, money. It was a regular thing. So it was that type of thing. It's sort of like, you know, in any other setting where you're not supposed to be chummy with certain people in the area, it happens. So that's not something that would stand out as, whoa, what's going on there?
So can I ask you this, and I don't mean to cut you off, but can I ask you, I need to know this. What do you know as someone who was, as a young woman, because you ain't that old, you know, single woman, single mother, staying in the shelter, what do you know of any background checks given for staff? Did they tell you that they did give staff background checks? Were there any background checks?
That was not something that was discussed with the residents. However, I do find it highly alarming that someone who had any type of discretion against children was allowed to work in that facility. You are working around all types of people, young women, single women, children of all ages, all the time. And you mean to tell me you wouldn't do a background check to see if something like that was on their record? And let that be a reason to not hire someone. That is the part that's rather alarming. I mean, the fact that, you know, he was the type of man that he was and did whatever the things he did, you know, that was one thing, but for you to run a facility, a family shelter, where you have to have children in order to stay there, to reside there, and not even do a background check, that's alarming and a lot scary, actually. I mean, my son is a grown man, but my child was around this man. And that's alarming to me as well.
I'm here. I'm just awestruck. It's a lot to soak in. My listeners know I am a survivor, so I'm very transparent in that. And it's very easy, and I tell people this all the time. It is very easy to find yourself homeless. You know what I'm saying? It's very easy for your situation to take a slight slip, and you are in a place that wasn't in the game, you know? So
right.
Have children who feel like they can go to a job and do oven for themselves. I'm just perplexed because the reality, as we discuss this, is if he was working in a luxury high rise, before he took out his toothbrush and scrubbed the floor, he would have had all kinds of a background check. And this is just real. That's just how I see it. Would you agree with that?
Yeah.
Washington.
Hello? You're real sketchy.
Oh, okay. And particularly in Washington, D.C. You had to get a background check to work in a luxury car ride. So why didn't they feel that it was mandatory? Nikichi, are you there? Nikichi, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. I got dropped. I had to call back in.
Okay, no problem. But here now. So where we were at in the conversation was we were discussing how the reality is, especially in D.C., if he was working in one of these luxury high-rises, he would have been subject to all kinds of background checks. Do you agree?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, there's so much wrong with what goes on in that shelter. And on one hand, you want to kind of wipe the slate clean and start from scratch with, you know, the people who run it, the organization that runs it, the people who work there, on just about any level, just about any level. But on the other hand, it's the only family shelter in the city. So you can't really shut it down, you know, without having something else in place for the families who need to stay there. So it's one of those catch-22 situations. But if hello?
I'm here. I'm right here.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, okay. One of those catch-22 situations where there has to be a better method. It doesn't need to be closed down, but the way things are done really needs to be scrutinized. It really needs to be looked at and changed. Things need to be revamped, at least to some degree. Background checks should be absolutely mandatory. Just because you're, you know, hiring people to walk around a bunch of homeless families does not mean they don't deserve protection from the people
who
stay there.
Because at the end of the day, is that not the overarching message? Is that not the message? You're saying it right now. If you are poor, so fuck you. Fuck your protection,
exactly.
Fuck your safety, fuck your peace of mind.
Exactly.
Until you can get your money right, darling, this is what we have for you.
And in this city, it's coming at homeless families and low income, even moving up to moderate income families. The way that the city is being shaped is exactly that. Fuck you. We don't want you here. You know, Gray, one of his deputy directors, Bibi Otero, the director of DHS, they've all said things like, oh, they're lazy, they don't want to do anything, so we don't care. Or, you know, they need to be pushed into a certain direction because without being pushed, they're not going to do what they need to do to get out of the situation. Where my thing is, maybe if you set things up in the city where people can't progress, I don't need you to take care of me. I don't need you to hand me anything. I need you to get the fuck out of my way so I can do what I need to do to make it on my own. That's not what they're structuring the city for. They're structuring the city to get rid of a certain demographic, a very large demographic in the city. And it's evident in the way that things are run in that shelter. And it's not the only place, but it's a very clear example of how things are, how that community is looked at.
I want to bring up something that was well-known locally, but not so much nationally. There was a conversation about, a rec center. I'm just not going to put them out there specifically, but there was a rec center that was also housing homeless individuals, and it was on the news for poor conditions, you know, not having sufficient water, things like that. And this was right before the Relisha Rudd case really became popular. Were you familiar with that issue?
That was new. That type of that happening was new. That, you know, the waiting list and the line is so long that we're going to cram a bunch of families in this one space where there's no closed off area. You know, all of your things, all of your children are exposed, you know, to everyone else who is there. And that had never happened before. There were always other things in place for those people who were on the waiting list. You know, I know when I was evicted and went to sign up to get in, I had to wait 3 months. There were other families that had to wait, but they were placed in hotels. You had a hotel room where you had a bathroom of your own. You could shower your children. You could change clothes. Your kids and yourself are walking around in pajamas in a room where there's a door, a knob, and a lock. But here you have all of these families, and I don't even know how many were placed there, but here you have all of these families in one great big giant open area, and there is absolutely no privacy. There is nothing can be hidden. You know, your children are exposed. You are exposed to every other element that's there. And again, it falls to the perception of how this city views this community. But placing families like that in a rec center, that wasn't done. That was something new. And to me personally, I feel like it's a further decline in how this community is viewed. There is nothing that wants to be done to help low-income homeless families get back on their feet, get to a better place. Nothing, they don't care. They want us out of the city. They want these people out of the city. You know, you can come in to work all you want. You can come in to play, but we don't want you to live here. So things are getting worse and worse and worse and worse and worse, and a lot of people don't really realize that.
Let me ask you this. As a professional in the field, you are a community organizer. You have turned and dedicated your life to this work. What are a few policies that you would put in place if you were, you know, the decision makers that have their hand over the homeless, you know, the general shelter, etc.?
Well, for the shelters themselves, and before I even answer the question, I think that more than one thing needs to be put in place. Not just in the areas of the shelter, but for the shelter specifically, it would be, you know, when you come in, you know, you sign up and we tell you, given your situation, if you need education, if you need mental health services, if you need child care, if you need whatever you need, someone is in place to help you get the services that you need to move to that step up, to start that step up to progressing and make things better for yourself. You know, background checks will be done on all of the staff because we can't have certain people as a clear example of what's happened working around families with children, young children. So background checks would be mandatory. I would also, excuse me, I would also have things in place such as healthy, good food. You can't tell me that there are not restaurants and other places in this city that are willing to feed healthy and good nutritional food to the families in that shelter, because what they are served is slop. It's not adequate. It's not anything that I would put on a plate and give to anyone in my own home. But these are the things that are given to families. You know, there are numerous things that need to be changed. Even some of, and I really, I do want to be clear, I cannot say this about every single case manager, but there are case managers who would say, you have to come and see me this time every week, you know, 10 o'clock on every Tuesday, you need to see me, we need to be working towards getting you better. And families would go every week at that time and knock on the case manager's door. They're not there, they're not returning phone calls, they're not answering their phones, and then get written up for not seeing a case manager in 2 months when they gave up after the first month because they were never there. So those things, there is no, it's not enough accountability. Like, all of the accountability is put on the resident. So it's like some of the staff and case managers can do whatever they want to do, good or bad, help your situation or hurt it, and not be held accountable for it. The residents are being held accountable. The rapid rehousing program, something that the mayor is pushing on families, which I think is a horrible idea, it's a four-month subsidy program. And me, myself, I'm a single mother. My son was a senior in high school and went to college before I even moved out. So there were certain things that I didn't need services for, but if I am someone who had a 11-year career as an admin, I've made as much as almost $40,000 a year. I don't have educational barriers. I don't have disabilities. I don't have mental health issues. I don't have, all I needed was a livable wage. That's it. And if it took me 3 years before I even found a job, what am I going to do in 4 months? And I am someone who didn't need anything else besides that livable wage. So if you have families coming in who need all of these other services and they're not getting the adequate help that they need before they can get to the point where they can be self-sufficient, what good are you doing them? You're only housing people. You're only keeping a roof over their head. And is that good enough? Is it enough? How can they progress to a better point if you're not even providing everything that they need to get to the better point? The whole reason I chose to go into a shelter was because if I came to stay with a friend, you can give me a roof over my head. I still need to eat. I still need to go out and look for a job. I still need transportation. I still need, you know, all of the, I'm using your electricity, I'm using your stove, I'm using all of these things, and if I don't have any money, how can I contribute to your household? Therefore, how long will you allow me to stay? I chose to go to a shelter because I felt like that's where the services were for me to get on my feet, but they weren't there. I got my apartment on my own.
So are you saying to the public who does not know the reality of their nation's capital, who in the White House, the monument in the Capitol, up here, that you are not surprised that Shamika Young is an 18-year-old of D.C. General, that is not something to be shocked about?
That what's not surprising?
That it's not shocking that Shamika Young has been a resident of the shelter for 18 months.
Oh, God, no. No, that part doesn't, that's nothing. It's nothing. It's nothing. It is ridiculous. I know families who, again, stayed in a hotel for a year, 2 years, came to the shelter itself, stayed for 12 months, and then went to another, they went to apartment-style shelter and are still there after 16 months. That's years of homelessness. years, and you're within a system that is supposed to help you get on your feet so you can make those steps to get out and do better and move up in society and so on and so forth. So why are families kept and just move from pillar to post, but kept in a perpetual cycle of poverty? They're not given the assistance they need. They're not given the services they need. They're not given the knowledge that they need to move up, to really advance. What good are you?
So the Washington Post printed an article that said Relisha Rudd was quoted as referring to the shelter as the trap house. This is what this 8-year-old was calling this shelter. Can you kind of give us your opinion on what she may have meant by that? Now, I know you can't speak for her, but can you speak for you as far as the trap house stuff you saw?
Well, certain things I saw were, and in numerous examples, I was there for 11 months. And there were families who moved out into the rapid rehousing program before I did. After I moved out and I came back for work doing, you know, organizing, and families were back because they were pushed into something that did not fit them. You know, they did not get help finding childcare, but were pushed to get a job so they could get an apartment. They were not given the help that they needed to get mental health under control before they could go get a job to sustain themselves. So they were left in a perpetual cycle of poverty. I met a young lady, and this was one of the most interesting stories that I'd ever heard, and this was after I left the shelter. I met a young lady who at that time was living at the shelter. She'd been there for a year. She'd also been working for a year in a child care facility. Do you know it took her a year to get a voucher to place her child in the same child care facility that she worked in? What if she gotten a job at McDonald's? Yes, it's minimum wage, but it's a job. It's income. They're not going to wait a year for you to find a babysitter. They're not going to wait a year of excuses of, my child is sick, I don't have anyone to watch them today. They're not going to wait a year. Corporate America certainly is not. Training classes certainly are not going to wait a year. Employment opportunities are not going to wait a year. But because the government, and I've heard this quoted from numerous sources, because the government wants children of a certain age, 4 years old, in school, they're giving child care providers a hard time with vouchers. But this puts this young lady in a position where she found a job. She did what the government wants us to do. So we're not in their pocket, so to speak. She got a job. She stayed employed. But you're not helping her. You can't afford child care if you make below a certain amount in this city. It is ridiculously high. It's necessary. If you make below a certain amount, that voucher is necessary in order for you to sustain and move up. But it takes you a year before you even get it. And you're doing everything you're supposed to do. You're meeting your case manager. You're going to the employment services program. You're going to recertify when you're supposed to. You're moving up in your job. You're doing all of the things that they're telling you you have to do in order to receive these services. But on their part, they're making you wait. So after a year, you lose your job. Now you don't have an income. Now you have to rely on TANF again and food stamps again and lose your place and move back into a shelter. This is the type of perpetual cycle of poverty that they're keeping families in. Families have been lucky. I've been lucky, you know, but next month is not guaranteed for me either, you know. So things need to be seriously remodified. Things are not set up to help to the degree that it's absolutely needed. And again, everything is not on where DC, this shelter lacks. Some of it is on what the government has put in place in other ways. And like I said, I don't need you to take care of me. I don't need you to give me a handout. I need you to get the fuck out of my way so I can do it myself. And I won't have to be in your pocket. If the government would remove things like that, making people wait a year to get a voucher to work a job that they're requiring them to work, then they can progress and they can move up and get off of these services, and you won't have to worry about them anymore. But because they haven't done that, things are the way that they are and getting worse every day.
Mm. Well, you know, I'm going to get to the question. You can hear me still, right?
Yes.
Okay, great. I want to talk a little bit more about this body that just popped up in the park. Because, again, people don't see our local news. Nancy Grace just started talking about it 5 minutes ago, and so did Jane. Bless your heart. But here in D.C., this has been a topic of conversation for a while. So for people who are not familiar, while the search for Khalil Tatum was taking place, his wife popped up dead in room 132 at the Red Roof Inn at Oxon Hill. A hotel with cameras, staff. I actually was staying at this hotel that night when everything happened. Luckily, I wasn't on that side, thinking I was having a bit of a staycation, getting away for a moment. But, hey, look at God. Anywho, he shot her in this hotel, bold and brazen as the day is long. They also say that maybe a month prior to all of this unfolding, he had filed for divorce from his wife. They were looking for him in a white truck, said he was dropped off at Southern Avenue Metro Station. And then we have this. I'll just get straight to the news clip, and I want to ask you about it after we play the local news footage from My Pop.
Will not end when the search ends. taking your expected search here at the park to wrap up tomorrow or sometime early on Thursday, with Tatum now confirmed dead, and she said that the search for Alicia is so perfect right now.
Maureen, thank you. And we will continue to bring you coverage in the disappearance of Alicia Rudd on the air.
So, I mean, there we have it, Key. They found this man in Kenilworth Park, and not the first day that they were searching, about the second day that they were searching. And this, for people who don't know, was the day before primary elections for mayor in D.C. Mysteriously, this man has now committed suicide. He was bold enough to pop his wife at the hotel with the cameras. Now, all of a sudden, he has found a shack to go shoot himself in the head. Do you believe it?
No.
Okay, so I'm not the only one. And he was saying, apparently, they say purchasing trash bags and lime and some other things with which to dispose of a body. Do you think that this man killed himself?
No.
Do you believe he's dead?
It's too shaky. Now that's another question. I don't know. I really don't know. I mean, there has been so much shaky stuff since the beginning of this. It's ridiculous. I don't know what to believe. I can tell you the facts of how DC General itself was while I was there, and wouldn't be surprised if still in those ways. Still like that, but with this particular case, there are a lot of questions.
A lot of people are saying, well, you know, CPS are involved. Project. Can you just give an idea of how many nonprofit and advocacy organizations come through the DC General Hospital, the Shelter Family, at any given time, particularly around this time? Okay.
Yeah, okay, you broke up there for a second. You said how many...
What I was saying is, Alicia Rudd was involved with the Homeless Children's Playtime Project. She was also under the care of CPS. They were looking into some things. But can you give listeners an idea of the number of nonprofit and advocacy organizations that come through the shelter at any given time on any given day?
Oh, my gosh. I couldn't put a number to it. And, you know, basically the thing with nonprofits is whatever their cause is, whatever their fight is, if it has to do with homeless families, then they want the families to come and testify. They want the families to be part of the actions because, and I also believe that the community that you're fighting for should be part of the fight. I absolutely agree with that. So DC General was a very popular spot for nonprofits to come and get people to testify and speak on certain issues and talk to council members and talk to the mayors and, again, do actions or, you know, all of these different types of things. But how many, I could not tell you. If they weren't at this particular shelter, then they were at single men's shelters or shelters for youth. Or shelters for the LGBTQ community, or, you know, some type of shelter. But they were frequent and all during the budget season. After the budget season, you wouldn't hear from them. Most while, you know, no one else was in fighting right now. But during budget season, that shelter is a very popular spot in the nonprofit community.
So basically what I was trying to get to is somebody should have seen something was going on. If you're there, if you're doing the work, if you're building real relationships, CPS should not have been the first. CPS should not have been the first. And I'm disgusted because now we've moved to the point, I shared the story of Khalil Tatum, now his body has popped up, or so they say. on the eve of primary elections. But most recently, they're saying that a person of interest was identified. And I'm going to get to this story about this person of interest. We're going to play the news clip. I'll add the added details that have come forward. And I'm going to ask you about your thought processes on this. Just let it play out. 1 second. As I was stating to you all, we've reached the point now where they're saying that there is a new person of interest in the Militia Royale case. And this is what the news has to say about it. We can't seem to get the video footage, but the short version of it is that they are saying that this man is wanted because apparently he's seen in Union Station here in Washington, D.C., dropping someone off at the train who may or may not have been Relisha Rudd. There are also people who have really taken to the defense of Shamika Young, basically stating that she was a good mother, asking her, does she need anything? There's been money that's been flashed all over the place. There's just been a whole lot of suspect shit that has accumulated in this case. And I really want to know, what are your thoughts? What do you really think in the last 10 minutes has happened to Relisha Rudd? Do you think that she has passed away? Do you think that she has been sold into some sort of child prostitution? Do you think that this man really did put her on a train to some unknown, undisclosed location? Some are even saying that Khalil Tatum may or may not have been her father. What are your thoughts on all of these conspiracy theories? Or do you have your own?
Well, you can't follow everything you hear. You will be highly confused because there are, like you said, there are theories popping up everywhere. I even saw something on Facebook that was saying a woman claiming to be a neighbor of Tatum and his wife, saying that that little girl has been with them for years. She's seen that little girl for years with that family. So, and, you know, the mother's talking with the media has been sketchy itself. You know, people don't trust her. People don't know what to believe. I don't know if she's alive. I really hope she is. I don't want to believe anything else than that. Let me say that. I don't want to believe that she has been sold into some type of child prostitution ring. I don't want to believe that she's been killed. But if Tatum's wife is dead, Tatum is supposed to be dead, and some other strange man that, you know, no one's ever heard of before is all of a sudden dropping her off, you know, at Union Station, then, and if Tatum is dead, where is she? If he had her, where is she? So, unfortunately, the I don't know if I can call them facts because you don't know what to believe, but of what we do know, it doesn't look like she is. And that's the saddest part of this whole thing.
How do you think we can prevent this in the future?
Oh, wow. People who provide any type of service to low-income communities of any kind, whether they're just minimum wage or less than $30,000 a year or homeless, need to care a little bit more. There were instances that I witnessed, and it never happened to me, but there were instances that I witnessed where people talked down just because you were there to receive a service. You were talked down to. You were thought of in a certain way. The same views the mayor has about the homeless community. People who provide services, welfare, CAN-AM, food stamps, Medicaid, they look down on you because you need those services. These things are set up by the government to help people get to a better point. So why are you looking down on me? If I'm coming in for help, why am I viewed as less than, as lazy, as people need to care more? There needs to be some type of, I don't know, a personality test, or I don't know what can be put in place, but that needs to be a key component of those who serve a certain community. Because if you don't care about me, how can you help me? You don't care if I live or die. You don't care if I make it or not. You have no sympathy, no empathy for anything I go through, but you're supposed to help me. It doesn't compute. There needs to be a lot. There needs to be an ounce of care would be great for the community that service providers to serve. And again, I will not say it's all of them. I will never say that. My case manager has been beautiful. The case manager I've had in Rapid Rehousing, she has been wonderful. She is excellent at her job, and I have to give her that. And there are plenty of others. There are those, the case manager I had at DC General. She was on her game. She was wonderful. But there were others, and not just at that shelter. And when I've gone to file for services at DHS, there were plenty who felt just because you were there to get the help that they're supposed to provide for you, that you're less than. That needs to change. If we can start there, I can't even say start there, but that's definitely one of the things that absolutely needs to change.
Well, I thank you for being honest. I thank you for being candid. I thank you for coming on. As we stated, you lived in the shelter a while ago. You knew Khalil Tatum. You know, this has been a problem. That was the point. You know, we got an inbox message asking us, why not speak to someone who lives there now? Because the point is, this could have been prevented. If you missed anything that was said on the One Mic Stand with Simply Nay today, know that this could have been prevented. Know that there are professionals with resources that could have assisted, not just for the shelter, but every other individual like her. Know that if someone is being a little too friendly with your child, it is not okay. And you have every right, no matter your situation or your circumstance, to speak up and speak out. Know also that you do not have to be a biological mother or father to be a parent. And that the proverb is real. It takes a village, and the whole village has failed. I'm not pointing fingers. The entire village, everybody who encountered this little girl and never said anything, the entire school system. Because I know, and I'm going to speak out, I know of families who their kids are sick too many days in a row. They're filling out whole attendance protocol plans. DCPS does have attendance protocol plans for if your child misses too much school. So there was someone who could have done something. But I digress. If you don't have the coins in the District of Columbia, they're trying to say you don't count, and we have to change that. No pun fucking intended. None intended. I want to thank my sponsors who jumped out there and still put their money where their mouth was to make sure that this happens. Check out the Soapbox Shop. Soapboxshop.bigcartel.com. They have dope things in there. The support is free line. Is there more products to be released? Also, it is National Poetry Month. Some people call it National Poetry Writers Month. Whichever you prefer, I'm spitting hot fire. 30 for 30 going in. You may want to be following me somewhere at I Am Simply Nay. They're also showing it on the show page at One Mic Stand Show. So follow us and become affiliated. Share your poetry with us as well. We're doing great things in the community. Big and best support team. We thank you for listening. We will be back next Sunday with another subject. And love it just as much as you did. I want to thank my guests. I want to thank my sponsors. And I want to invite you guys to be a part of the village. And don't drop the ball no more. I'm going to close out with a song that I think sums this shit all the way up. Tupac, Brenda's Got a Baby, on the One Mic Stand with Simply Nay.
Now, Brenda's got a little one.